You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we founded a country and fought a war so we didn't have to worry about royal weddings. Well, we did, not us specifically. America. I'm your host, Justin M. Wozneski, and if you also did not give two shits about the royal wedding, even though there was an American marrying into the royal family and she was half black and she's a divorcee and all of these other things, then you are in the right place. And tell your other friends who had the same feelings about the royal wedding, about the midside, and we can all be in the right place together. Joining me in this correct place, I don't want you to mistake when I say right, you're going to think like right, left, blah, blah, blah. No, the correct place. From our nation's capital, which might be the wrong place, Daniel T. Richards.
So many qualifiers. Just get to the introduction. Jeez. If I had to sit through one more dependent clause. My God. DC, that's the DC motto, by the way, is one more dependent clause.
Good. I was hoping you were going to do a pun on the word dependent. And I think maybe I'm doing all of these asides because I saw Deadpool 2, or that's what the entire movie is based upon. So maybe we can blame it on that.
Let's blame it on that and not that you're horrible at this. Yes.
Did you watch or care about the royal wedding, Daniel?
The what?
Exactly. Also joining us in the correct place, forgoing his white male gay privilege by identifying as a woman. And in case anyone out there was wondering, that is a sarcastic joke. William Green.
Hello, hello. Yes, the Dale of Lawn has been cloudy all week, and the lows have been in the sub-60s, so we're slowly slipping into an L.A. depression.
June gloom is coming early, it seems.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that was an actual thing until I moved to L.A. People used to say June gloom, and I thought it was almost a joke, but no, that L.A., the only time of the year it becomes a little bit depressing is June. It looks like
Midsiders out there, if you ever wonder about something that doesn't make sense because it doesn't exist in your culture or your geography or your weather or whatever, your climate, and it's something the media talks about all the time, it is probably true only in LA. That is just a general rule you can live by.
I was looking at a house. That's why I held up these guys. This isn't going to be a clear at all to the listeners, but I held up the recording time because we were doing a final walkthrough on a house. Fives and I are buying a house.
Oh, man.
How adult
responsible
is that?
Adulting.
I know. It's weird.
But are you guys royalty?
What?
Are you royalty? Because I only care about the mundane, normal things you do if you're royalty. That's what I've learned this weekend.
I'm just going to continually reply a sort of stilted what every time we talk about royalty.
So how much avocado toast did you have to give up to be able to afford a house in the capital area?
Well, that whole from the nation's capital thing is going to be a little wrong. As soon as we move this next weekend, it's going to be a little farther out into Maryland, although still on the metro line. So I'm going to count it as still being in the DC metro area.
Well, Greenbelt is a beautiful
city.
I do work in the nation's capital, yes. I do work in the District of Columbia, in the city of Washington. Yes. Did you know that technically we could have other cities in the District of Columbia? So, like, if, like, the Northeast decided to revolt and become, like, the city of Jefferson, they could do that?
Hmm.
That's how that works.
Like, the Northeastern quadrant of D.C. could become its own city?
Yeah. Or any part, just giving an example of it.
I can just imagine now everyone in Gallaudet University all getting together and becoming their own city.
Yeah, totally. They could become the city of King Jr. Yeah.
I think they could do it based upon what they heard. If they heard Yanni or Laurel, that's how you could divide DC up. And isn't that how we're all dividing this week? Let's talk about that in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
The internet this week imploded with a debate over whether or not listeners could hear the word Laurel or the word Yanni in an audio clip, in a controversy similar to the blue dress, gold dress. Was that the other one? There was much debate over this little tiny audio clip that wanted you to vote on whether or not you could hear the word Laurel or hear the word Yanni. The clip and original were posted on Instagram, Reddit, and other sites by high school students who said that it had been recorded from a vocabulary website playing through the speakers on a computer. One detail may frustrate some and vindicate others, but I don't want to get there yet. So first off, I want to ask you both, are you familiar with this weird controversy, and what did you hear, Justin, first?
I was only familiar about it because of a group text thread I'm in with. It was actually an Instagram thread I'm in with my girlfriend and our gay friends, and they started talking about Yanni versus Laurel, and I was like, what the fuck are you guys talking about? Like, how are these even related? Because those two names on face value wouldn't seem related. And then eventually the clip was sent to me, and I heard Laurel because I'm a normal human being.
William, are you also a normal human being, or do you have super ears?
I could not hear it until I moved the slider a bit to the Yanni side.
William is referring to...
We'll talk about the slider in a bit, but yeah, when he says it, he means Yanni.
Yeah. So I only heard Laurel, and I asked all of my team at where I work. They could only hear Laurel. We asked every passerby we could find. They could only hear Laurel. So the conclusion that I have is that anyone who says Yanni is a communist and they're out to destroy the country. That's really as far as I got with this controversy. But the slider that he's referring to is an audio slider created by none other than the New York Times, because that's what journalism is, where you can change the frequency of the audio clip to lower tones or higher tones. And the higher the tones you allow in, the more you can hear the word Yanni, and I feel like that's cheating. So, do you know the origin of this, Justin? First of all, are we just out of problems, as Adam Carolla would say? Like, is there really nothing else to discuss? It was, in some ways, a welcome break from discussing whether or not Trump is or is not a Nazi, but nonetheless, I feel like there are other pressing issues that we could take up, other than Trump or Laurel Yanni. Justin?
Well, this was just filler until the next school shooting happened. Was that what all this was? We were like, so America, we have nothing going on until some other kid decides to go psychotic. So let's just discuss irrelevant things on the internet. Now, in general, I think that there's too much time on the internet and not enough content. It's sort of like back in the day, people used to hang out outside of convenience stores and just like talk shit and do nothing. You know, that's how Kevin Smith came up with Jay and Silent Bob. And if you ever watch Clerks, that's the whole gimmick of when they cut to the outside and there are people just doing fucking ridiculous things in the parking lot. It's now that everyone just does ridiculous things in the parking lot in front of everyone on the internet. And some of these things happen to catch on because everybody is directionless, they're aimless, they don't know what they're doing, so they just fill their time with this crap. And really what a lot of it is the origin of this. This was a girl in high school studying a vocab word who went to hear how it was pronounced online and then put it on her Instagram story, and then other kids shared it, and it became popular that way because who has the least to do is kids, because they have the least amount of responsibility, and then it spawns forward to the adults. I would really say that, and this was a deeper analysis than I ever intended to go into on this subject, but I think the adults really need to start looking at themselves and going, why are we concerning ourselves with what these fucking high school kids are debating? Like, if you're over the age of 30, why do you give a shit about stuff like this anymore? Why do you care about memes if you're over the age of 30? Like, do you really need to see SpongeBob skateboarding and being like, oh, I'm so depressed? Like, why do you care about memes if you're over the age of 30?
Now I kind of want to see SpongeBob depressed on a skateboard.
I'm William, Google this that, also consume, I bet we can find it.
William, did this consume your life this week?
It did not at all. I was only barely aware of it until I was doing show prep and saw the cool slider. I actually kind of enjoy these auditory and optical illusion stuff, so I'm sure that people will dig into it even more. But you know, it's just something I'm interested in. The fact that the New York Times did all this work around it just to capitalize on the virality of it, isn't that really saying something about the beacon of journalism right now?
Yes, absolutely. It's not about doing good work. It's about clicks. That's really all that matters.
We can't have them properly research the fact that all the Palestinians killed in that supposed massacre by the Israelis during the protests, that like 50 of them were actual terrorists.
No,
they can't bother to research that, but this they can spend a ton of time on.
Absolutely. So the question to me, because I saw this going around with some people going like, you know, remember the Yanni Laurel debate when you take strong stances on politics or whatever, using it as sort of like this commentary on truth and relativity. And, you know, some people hear Laurel, some people hear Yanni, but we're all right in the end. No, you're not. The original clip came from a vocabulary.com page for the word Laurel, the word for a wreath worn on the head, i.e. a symbol of victory. And the overtones you're hearing result from bad audio recording. Yanni is not being said. No one is saying Yanni. You're hearing fragments from a really poor recording of a really poor audio clip. So the word that's being said is Laurel. There is an objective truth. Get over yourselves. Justin, did you want to report back on SpongeBob, or would you like us to move on?
I mean, there are, if you Google SpongeBob skateboard meme, there are many, many pictures. Now, we can debate whether objectively he is depressed or not, and I think people will come to different relative conclusions. No, I mean, there's conceivably a few of them that are depressed. But I have a question with what you're saying about the objective truth thing that confuses matters a little bit. Isn't there a little bit of an element of different people have different of levels of ability of hearing? And the comparison I want to make here is like a colorblind person. So a colorblind person cannot see the same range of colors as most people. Now, isn't it conceivable the people who are hearing Yanni hear a different range of frequencies, and that's why they can hear this poor recording? So the intent was to record Laurel, but the recording was so poor that these people with different ability to hear frequencies are hearing it differently because of that. So they are hearing messed up stuff. They are hearing something different, but the communication was non-objective. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, the communication failed in a certain sense, although a poor recording of a poor recording, you know, the original intent is probably perfectly fine. But it's the same thing as seeing a mirage in a desert. Your eyes are seeing this watery substance, but it's not water, and we can know objectively it's not water because we can go over and look at it and measure it, and we can understand how light reflects off of certain surfaces and understand what's going on. So in this case, we can understand that bad audio frequencies are causing people to hear something that sounds like Yanni, but Yanni is not actually being said because it comes from a page saying the word Laurel. So all that is true, but it can still all be, even though your sense perception can sometimes deceive you, it doesn't always deceive you, and it doesn't mean there isn't an objective reality out there to deal with.
Right, and if you're hearing Yanni, this is a good time for you to gather some self-knowledge about your hearing. So now you know your hearing is different from other people, and you should watch it more, and you can use that to your advantage, or you need to protect yourself against your own hearing if you're hearing Yanni.
Yeah, if you're hearing Yanni, you should change your CD collection because Yanni is a little outdated. Although a masterful piano player, a little underrated in that regard.
What I'm really saying is we just need to found an ethnostate, and anyone that heard Yanni should not be allowed in the ethnostate. That's what I'm really saying.
Yeah, they clearly are the inferior race.
Clearly. Well, speaking of the inferior race, a Latino... That's what this Starbucks barista would apparently believe. A Latino customer is unhappy with Starbucks because a barista wrote a racial slur on his drink cup. Indeed, this happened in the Los Angeles area, the La Cañada Flint Ridge Starbucks, where a customer who's only identified in this article as Pedro picked up his cup and saw that the word beaner was written on it. This comes after the racial incident in Philadelphia a few weeks ago where two black men were booted from a Starbucks after they sat there for a while and attempted to use the restroom without purchasing anything. As a result of that incident, and maybe this one will be folded in, Starbucks is closing all of its stores on one afternoon in May to discuss racial sensitivity and racial bias training. That will be May 29th, so don't try to go to Starbucks in the afternoon there. Justin, I had to laugh at this story. One, half Mexican, so I get a pass. Two, I haven't heard the word beaner since other Mexican students would call me that in high school. I forgot it was a racial slur. What say you?
Well, that's why this story is so funny, regardless of what race you are, because who thinks it's funny and a good idea to just write beaner on a cup, regardless of what the race of the person is? It's even worse because they're handing it to someone who may or may not be Mexican. And I don't even know. Does beaner only refer to Mexicans, or does it refer to anyone from Mexico down? I don't know. But the point is,
you only go down from Mexico. That's what I just heard.
Not even south, down.
Just down.
That was a joke. Thank you.
That was north-centric.
For pointing that out. That was definitely America-centric. Who thought that? What barista was like, you know what? This is going to be a really fucking funny prank. This is going to be a really fucking funny prank. And who was there? Their friend who didn't like hit them in the back of the head and be like, you're a fucking idiot. This is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard of in my entire life. This is really, really bad. Really bad. The area it's in, right? It's in Southern California. The context of everything that happened at Starbucks, and then the context of everything that was going on as well. I mean, wasn't this a day after that guy got his video went viral, that lawyer in New York City who was complaining that the dishwashers or the employees at a restaurant were speaking Spanish and he threatened to call ICE on them, and now the media won't leave him alone? So it's like, what? It's just, this is what's making things worse. People use this and then they go, oh, look, racism in America. It's like, no, fucking idiots in America. But we use this just like the Yanni and Laurel thing because we have nothing else to focus on, and we act like this is what represents our entire culture.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, I'll let William weigh in a second, but let's just, I hate that this gets blown out of proportion the way it was. It's bad, fine, although, as I noted in my little joke, it was only other Mexican students who would call me beaner in high school. So, but this isn't indicative of racism in America. How many cups were served at all the Starbucks and all the coffee cups coffee shops in the country today, that did not have a racial slur on them? What percentage of cups did have a racial slur on them? One out of, I honestly don't know how many cups of coffee were sold in a day. 40 million? What's the percentage on that, William? You do the math, quick.
No idea. I'm not a human calculator.
Oh, well, you're a rocket scientist, so I thought maybe.
Just because he worked at SpaceX doesn't make him a rocket scientist. But before you ask William his question, I have a question that maybe both of you can answer that's related to what you're saying, Daniel, is why this customer too, right? So let's presume this person, I'm just going to grant the premise that this person who wrote beaner on the cup is racist and not just a fucking idiot and thought they were being funny. Why, if you're racist, is this the one Hispanic person that you decide to write beaner on the cup for? Because you're in Southern California. You know a lot of Hispanic people are coming through.
You're in
Starbucks.
La Cañada. Bad choice of place to move if you're racist against Mexicans.
Maybe they made the mistake I made and they moved there and they thought it was La Canada, Flint Ridge.
That Enya gets you every time.
Yeah, so yeah. Why this one person, if they are racist? Why this Hispanic person?
Why Pedro?
Well, I was thinking about that, too, and the article may have an answer why. We know that those guys in Philadelphia settled with some sort of exchange of value, right? Starbucks coughed up something. Maybe this is an inside job, you know? Someone thinking, well, if I can do this, maybe my friend can get some money.
True, yeah. In Philadelphia, they settled for like a couple $100,000 toward an after-school program or something like that. In this case, the Starbucks offered him a $50 gift card, which he called insulting. No, Beaner is insulting. A $50 gift card is more pain and suffering than you went through by having to read the word Beaner on a cup. So take it and go away. But also, again, if this is what racism in America is now, like that they will, you will still go into a Starbucks and get a cup of coffee, but one out of 40 million times the word Beaner will be written on it. Have we not defeated racism? Like, we didn't kick the Mexicans out of the store, right? They're still allowed to come in and buy coffee, but one out of 40 million is going to have a racial slur on it. Kind of a win.
Yes. Daniel, that's exactly like when I was in Warsaw with my girlfriend, and she bought a pretzel in the mall in Warsaw, and the old white woman acted really annoyed with her the whole time, like, oh my god, I can't believe I have to sell you this pretzel. And we walked away, and my girlfriend was like, she's really racist. And I was like, yeah, but she's the most impotent racist ever. Like, she still fucking sold you the pretzel. You got what you wanted. She got her money. Who gives a fuck? Like, sure, she acted like an ass, but who cares?
Is it Bill Burr or Carolla who talks about he doesn't care if you're an arsonist who never sets houses on fire?
Yeah, no shit.
But like deep down inside, you really want to burn shit down, but you never do ever. It's like, I don't care about that person. Same way. If this is racism, there is no racism. The end.
Well, there is, but you can just laugh at it. It's the same thing like we were sitting in a hotel in Prague at breakfast in the morning, and this old white guy just looks at me and he just like shakes his head disapproving at me. If that's all you're gonna do, you're gonna shake your head disapprovingly at me because I have an Asian girlfriend, all I'm gonna do is laugh at you because you're wasting energy shaking your head. Like,
he was probably shaking his head at your Patriots hat. How do you know it was because of your Asian girlfriend?
Nobody in Europe knows what TB12 is. They're just like, what's that weird design on his gray hat?
I don't know. Sounds like a Jets fan to me.
Well, I wanted to jump in on this. I want to know, one, was Beaner just an autocorrect failure? Because you know they got to have spell check on those registers by now. And then,
what name would autocorrect a Beaner?
I don't know. I'll ask the audience to tweet us things that autocorrect a Beaner.
How do you get from Pedro to Beaner via autocorrect?
I don't know. The second question I have is, I thought Beaner was a phrase you used to refer to someone from Boston.
True. That's right.
So are Beantown. We sure this is racist?
Also, isn't coffee just called the bean? Like coffee bean and tea leaf? Like maybe he's just thought the guy drank a lot of coffee.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Maybe he was mad because he usually goes to Coffee Bean. But because he went to Starbucks this time, he was calling him out. He was like, you fucking Beaner. Go back to Coffee Bean where you belong.
Maybe he's a horrible pitcher in the minor leagues.
I think we spent enough time on this useless story.
I don't know who Pedro is. Anyway, speaking of useless millennials... Well, I guess this is the generation after millennials. That don't really work, but I don't know how that works exactly.
I have a mini rant on what you just said, Daniel. So they even did that in Deadpool 2. Like, the whole plot of Deadpool 2 is Deadpool trying to save this, like, 10-year-old kid. And at one point, Deadpool's like, millennials, you just can't deal with them or something like that. And I want to be like, aren't we past millennials at this point? Like, if I'm a millennial, right? Like, I am the hard edge of the millennial, right? I'm the beginning of millennials. You're going to say a 10-year-old is the same generation as me? Like, can we move on from this idea that anyone who's annoying with technology and doesn't pay attention and is a dick is a millennial?
That's right.
You described yourself so perfectly.
Our generation. Yeah. So anyway, people graduating from college, the class of 2018... will have a starting average salary of $50,390 in their first job, according to a new survey. But that's little change from last year. This is a quote from CNN Money. With the 2018 U.S. inflation rate hovering just over 2%, real wages for this year's grads are virtually flat. But it should be easier to find a job than in previous years. The unemployment rate recently dropped below 4% for the first time since 2000. Obviously, pay varies by industry. Those in science, technology, engineering, and math-related fields earn significantly more on average. For example, the survey found that average pay for entry-level software developers is $67,236, while customer service reps make a piddly $35,360, and it analyzed surveys across 310,000 entry-level positions from about 1,000 organizations across the country. So, Justin, how did this article make you feel about getting your degrees in humanities?
No comment. No, it it makes me very sad because I don't think you can ever really make more than $35,000 a year with a humanities degree, no matter how much experience you have. At least that's the way they seem to treat it on the job market. It's like if you quote anything over like 50 as what you're expecting as a salary, they immediately stop talking to you. Especially California, yeah. Where like 35 isn't even a living wage.
That's true. I was curious if the average counted things like people who go into professional sports, because that feels like the average is slightly high. I don't know. Certainly, when I was coming out of grad school, I made below what the average is in this article. That's with a master's degree. So, William, I know you're in a much more, let's call it lucrative, hard science industry. How do the numbers in this article look for you? Is this about what you expected? Is it low, high?
It seems to me really high, and part of it is, I don't know if it could be just sophistry or outright, you know, hiding the real figures, which seems a little weird because they talk about the unemployment rate, but remember that the unemployment rate that people usually quote don't include the people who have given up on seeking jobs. And yeah. Also, how do you count the salary of people who are maybe applying for grad school or maybe already accepted to grad school? Do they just not count in the unemployment numbers? And if so, those are a lot of zeros that would bring down the average a lot. So like if you're looking at people who have accepted positions and graduated and get that average, then maybe that number makes sense. But what about the people who drop out, which we know is mostly male? What about the people who have given up on trying to get a job and are looking to duck into grad school? And what about the people who, like me, I worked 30 hours a week all through undergrad. You know, I was already making 35K around there. And that was way back 100 years ago when I was in undergrad, you know, working two jobs while I was in college just to make sure I had enough money for books and shit. So, you know, this number doesn't seem very accurate. If this was just people who finished their undergrad and accepted a job, then this looks like about right to me.
No, it's interesting. The Los Angeles rate, Justin, the average starting salary in LA will be $56,386. So there you go. Good times out there in LA. Washington is not on this 10 list. It's not a top 10 list. It's just they picked 10 major cities. Washington is not on this list, I suspect, because in Washington, you either make literally nothing or literally all the money in the world.
There's really government contract. Government contract work is so lucrative in D.C. They push the average.
Yes, you're either an unpaid intern or you're a government contractor and you make a gazillion dollars. So the average is probably a weird skewed number. Does this make you optimistic, Justin, or pessimistic about the future?
Is it down the street, or is it across the street or down there? What is the saying?
I
make
don't
sure you
know.
Get into the bathtub of warm water, though, right?
Yeah, I think I'm about to reenact the end of 13 Reasons Why here. No, it's just there's a couple things. I mean, first of all, inflation is depressing. Second of all, insanely high cost of living is depressing. And third of all, the perception this is going to create with these kids coming out of college when they read an article like this, when, as William is saying, that the numbers are all screwed up. And as you said, the numbers are all screwed up, especially these humanities people. Like, I feel really, really bad about somebody coming out with an English degree who's about to get $20,000 a year. because they're going to see that average, and you know, then they're going to want to kill themselves.
Yeah. No bueno. Speaking of, I don't know, killing yourself? No. Young people? No. Controversy. There we go. Comic book shop bans customer for supporting popular conservative comic book creators. Yes, this is Dylan is a comic book customer, a young white male who enjoys books like Action Comics, Astonishing X-Men, and others, spending on average $25 a month at Magic Mirror Comics in Mill Creek, Washington. He's been a customer there since he moved last fall and looked forward to supporting his favorite books each Wednesday as they were released. That is, until he was banned. Dylan creates online reviews of comics on his YouTube channel, and he created one recently for a comic called Jawbreakers, Lost Souls. And he's about the number two result, he explains in a video. Because of that, he says he was banned from going to this comic book shop because this comic is conservative. Interesting. Justin, have you heard of this comic? I haven't heard about it until show prep today, so.
Oh, I've heard of it for a few reasons. I mean, I've heard of it from William, who was spamming us with links all week in the Midside thread on Facebook. I've heard of diversity in comics before from Midsider Katrina, and also because of that channel's involvement with conversation around Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman. And I had something else to say about how I'd heard about it before. But yeah, I've definitely heard about this before. I mean, I don't have much interest in it because I don't read comics. So as far as the fact that, oh my God, someone's creating a conservative comic, like I don't give two shits about that. I don't read comics. I know that another popular, I don't know if diversity in comics, and William, you can answer this. I wouldn't necessarily call them right wing. I wouldn't necessarily call them alt-right, but I know a considered alt-right figure, Vox, who wrote one of those, you know, books about identifying SJWs and how they are and stuff, he had his own plans to release a comic book as well. So there's definitely a market out there that these people are responding to, as opposed to what's going on with comics currently. And, you know, as we saw with Spider-Man Homecoming, I mean, that was definitely just Spider-Man social justice warrior. So they're definitely responding to a market need, market desire, but it's just not something I particularly care about. William, is diversity in comics, would you call them alt-right or right-wing?
Yeah, not, I actually wouldn't at all. He's definitely anti SJW political themes in comics, but it's not even necessarily a political argument. He's making a very artistic argument that people don't want this and that it leads to bad storytelling. And if you watch some of his videos, like, the reason he's popular is not because of his high quality videos. It's because he has very good analysis. And he's gotten a lot of pushback from the industry. And it's kind of a heroic story. He basically, you know, basically they were telling him put up or shut up. And he started an Indiegogo. Before this controversy started up, they had exceeded their goals. They had gotten something like $160,000 or something. Now it's over. Let me check it. I just had it up here.
It's over 250. Isn't
it? It's over 250 now. 309,000 is how much they've raised for this comic book. This comic book itself is apolitical. It's just a more traditional fantasy book made by some good creators, written by the Diversity in Comics guy. And the industry is just going bananas because it's not anti-SJW in its content, but the fact that it does not contain social justice is a huge threat to the industry. It is one of the best-selling comics this month. And it's completely independent. They had a publisher that got bullied by one of the heads of Marvel Comics into dropping it. Because they announced that they are going to have a publisher. They started getting some bad press from the industry because they realized this was a problem. They announced who the publisher was. Within 2 days, the publisher got a call from this Marvel guy, and then they dropped him. And so now they're because they've raised so much money, they're going to start an independent publishing house and get this into stores. And Yeah, I know I spammed you guys a lot this weekend because to me it's super interesting. You have this you have this industry that's just controlled by SJWs pushing back so hard against a creator that's not doing he's just creating a work, right? It's not a racist work or any of those things, right? It's just a more traditional fantasy story. Like if you look at the Indiegogo, it's a bunch of retired superheroes who fight a giant gorilla and realize, without giving any plot, realize that they actually need to save this gorilla, this giant monster, for some reason. It's just a traditional fantasy story.
Is there something in particular that makes this comic creator so controversial with the left? Is he an outspoken Trump supporter?
No, they see him as a white anti-SJW who hates all the things that, all the minority groups. Who he is, though, is a veteran with a minority wife and mixed kids who loves comic books, sends them to his friends when they're deployed. Like, it's someone who uses this art for, you know, spiritual fuel for people like him. And he wanted to write a book that his friends would enjoy because the market's not serving them. They're, you know, who in the trenches wants to read the new like Thundercats with their ridiculous Adult Swim animation and all social justice themes? You know, no one wants that. So yeah. This book, I think, this could be the beginning of a nice independent publisher publishing real stories, apolitical stories. Now, I'm not saying all stories need to not have politics in it, but certainly the market is being underserved. Every story, every book that gets put out by the mainstream publishers have gone full SJW, and there's a huge market. If this Indiegogo campaign is any indication, it's funded almost 4,000% above its goal. People want this.
That's great. That's awesome. I agree with you. People want this. They're filling a market need. Obviously, you know, I don't like that kind of storytelling. It's more naturalistic. It's not heroic. You know, we know all the critiques of Marvel and all of that. But I think there's another problem in this story, and it goes to answer Daniel's question as to why people are linking this with the alt-right and linking it with conservatives. And it's the fucking kid who's on there whining that he's kicked out of a store. He's looking for something to champion, and he's looking to do the same thing the fucking whiny social justice warriors are doing on the right. This is what we talk about all the time with conservative snowflakeism. Whoop-de-fucking-do, you were banned from a comic book store. Go to another one. Buy comics online. This is the same thing with the stupid fucking baker, right? If a comic book store wants to say you can't shop there anymore, just don't shop there anymore.
If you watch the video, he would agree with you completely. In fact, they have purposely hidden which shops these are because they don't want people to go all, you know, use those tactics on these stores that are now colluding. And because of the whole Marvel involvement, I think the guy is actually going to open a FTC complaint, which, you know, we would also probably not be for, right? Like if this is, you know, I wouldn't want the government involved here, but certainly the way the law is written now, you could see this as anti-competitive behavior in the non-objective law we have now. But the point here is, and the point they continuously make, especially the Diversity in Comics guy, is that these guys are alienating their customers, right? The people who buy the books. And that's I think, the meat of this story, is that you have a whole industry that's been on the decline and is fighting against the customers, saying, no, we're not going to give you what you want. We're going to give you these things that you don't want.
And that's great for the Diversity in Comics guy, and that's great marketing for him, saying, hey, we're going to fill your niche, and I appreciate that messaging. That's great messaging. But I'm saying the fact that this kid made this video, and the fact that this story was picked up, and it was picked up on Twitter, I'm saying that confuses things, it confuses the conversation, and it makes anyone who opposes social justice warriors and opposes this type of storytelling by Marvel in this industry look bad, because it's exactly what they're saying in things like Gamergate, where they're saying, oh, look at these whiny white guys, That's what this kid is embodying, even by simply saying the comic book store kicked me out. He shouldn't be worrying about that. Who gives a flying fuck? Okay, you got kicked out of a store. There are lots of other stores. It's not like it was the guy his BFF and then suddenly wasn't his friend anymore because he saw his video. That's different. That's personal. Why are you airing that? That's my point. I'm saying there's two sides to this. I agree with everything you're saying. That's great about that side. But I'm saying this other side is the dark underbelly of what's going on in the culture right now. And it's fucking annoying because it makes it so people like me don't want to speak up and support diversity in comics because it's just like, oh man, I don't want to deal with possibly being linked with shit that I'm not linked with because of the way other people react.
Yeah, it's an interesting conundrum, I think, for, I don't know, I don't want to say conservatives. I want to say people who don't line up with social justice because, on one hand, yes, you don't necessarily want to do the whining, you don't want to use the same tactics. On the other hand, if attention isn't drawn to this, will the behavior ever change? That's the conundrum, Justin.
Oh, 100%. That is 100% the conundrum. And my point is, I think the right has gone too far in the whiny direction besides the pointing it out, right? Trump tried to take the lead with them and just start to point out, but even he fucking whines all the time and it's annoying as fuck. Like, do we have to hear him? Like, how often on Trump's Twitter does he fucking complain about shit like, oh my God, the media, and oh my God, they're trying to say that I colluded with Russia. Like, they almost continue to hype this in the same way social justice does because they're trading in the victim culture as well. And that's what I'm saying. The rest of us in the middle, we have that conundrum, Daniel. And it's so tough because it's like you say anything either way, even if you don't agree with the side, you instantly get slotted into that side.
Yeah. Also, that was the worst Trump impression I've ever heard.
Yeah, it sounded like Rucka Rucka Ali. Were you channeling him on that?
There was not one sad, not one believe me, not one huge, nothing. You got to work on that.
You are the worst co-host ever. You do not yes and. You are uncooperative, Daniel. Is that a better Trump impersonation?
You got to end with one word exclamation, like sad or wrong or something. But yeah, it was better. That was like a C+. It was good.
Annoying.
That's right. Much better. B-.
All right. Anyone else have anything else to say about this story?
No.
Anyone going to buy the comic? I'm curious, admittedly.
If I gave a shit about comics, I might buy the comic, but if I just don't like the art form.
Yeah, if I see it in the store, I will pick it up. And it sounds like it'll be in bookstores for sure, and it will be on the... Everyone in the comic book industry buys from this one distributor, and it'll be listed there. So I might, out of curiosity, hit up a couple of the Santa Monica comic book stores and see if it's available.
All right. Well, it's Jawbreakers Lost Souls. Is that what it's called?
Yep.
People can check it out if they want.
Well, there are a couple of them. I think there's just Jawbreakers, and then there's also Jawbreakers Lost Soul. I don't know. It's confusing. It got to the point where it does with Why Don't Read Comics. There were just too many, like, different, like, continuities and different spinoffs and different covers and all that shit. And I was just like, all right, I'm out.
There are 3 issues in, and there's already been 4 alternative universes.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of comic books and different alternative universe and different iterations, let's talk about a movie that came out this week. It's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because I don't think there's a lot to say. I saw Deadpool 2. I thought it was very good. I thought it was better than the first. Essentially, it's a story about Deadpool finding a family. Now, I am sort of aware of the fact that people might be upset because Deadpool is supposed to be like this crazy anti-hero, but they're definitely trying to make him more heroic in the story. In the movies, it's about him trying to save this 10-year-old kid who in the future kills Cable's family, and Cable comes back in time to kill the kid, and Deadpool says, let me try and stop him from becoming a killer before you kill him. And then Deadpool creates a whole team of people who are X-Force, and they end up stopping the kid at the end and saving him, and the kid becomes part of Deadpool's family, and they also fight the Juggernaut. There's time travel hijinks involved as well. It's all meta and referential. So it's what you would expect from a Deadpool movie. Daniel, I know your critique of the first one was you didn't like the storytelling, correct? Because it went all over the place time-wise?
Yep.
Yeah, basically. Well, this one, it starts with that a little bit in the beginning to sort of catch people up. But then after that, it's just like a straight story. There's a little bit of time travel because Cable comes back, and then at the end there's some time travel shenanigans, but it's not that bad. It's this movie is much more streamlined, and it's much easier to understand, and it's a simpler plot, and I think the story is better for it. And it also doesn't go all over the place with the meta-ness and the references and everything, which makes it, I think, more enjoyable because it's more relaxed than frenetic.
All right. I'm going to see it. I just didn't have time this weekend, but I would like to see it. I enjoyed the first one. It wasn't my favorite superhero movie.
Yeah, it's definitely not better than, say, a Man of Steel or a Batman versus Superman or even any of the Iron Man trilogy. But as far as what's coming out these days, I think it's better. William, you said an article right before we recorded about people critiquing it because it's not what? They're saying it should be more of what?
Well, they were trying to connect the X-Men Logan story with this one and saying that it was a better version of the story of Logan and that it was a critique on the fact that, you know, well, your father's X-Men, Americans believe things were getting better. And now with this Logan and Deadpool 2, we realize that the U.S. stands fully revealed, and we've come to realize that hatred and bigotry never left. Perhaps a harder edge take on mutants is required in both comics and film. That's the pull quote from that.
I think people saying that, though, miss the point of the Deadpool character and miss the appeal of the movie. And I can point to two examples from the movie for that. So these are minor spoilers. They're just throwaway gags. So if you don't want spoilers at all, stick your fingers in your ears and say la 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 la. If you don't care, then just keep listening. Two things. One, Deadpool actually calls attention to that because of the interaction with the X-Men. He makes a joke about how the X-Men was originally about racism in the 60s and how that metaphor is tired and no longer needed. So that's called out in the movie. They hang a lantern on that, which is kind of funny because they keep referencing Green Lantern. But also, Cable is an old white dude, and tongue-in-cheekly, movie-wise, Deadpool keeps assuming that Cable is racist. Like, he'll keep making comments about how Cable needs to stop being racist, and Cable's like, I'm not racist, I just fucking hate you. Or, like, he'll say something, and then Deadpool will say, stop being racist, and the black girl will be like, yeah, I'm with the old white guy, that wasn't racist what he said. So they draw attention to this, the idea that people are overly sensitive about these issues and that there are other things that are more important that are going on. And really, this whole movie was about how it's more important to have family than to worry about all this other shit. And Deadpool, though he's been alone his whole life, has to find his own family. So I think they're missing the appeal of what's going on with Deadpool, where everything is so absurd that the irreverence and the meta-ness and the mockingness is what people want nowadays.
So Justin, I have a question for you because I haven't seen the film yet. I kind of enjoyed the wisecrack guy's take on the first Deadpool. It was an interesting analysis, you know, talking about the sort of postmodernism and this fourth wall breaking and how that tied into some philosophical ideas. One thing you see a lot with sequels is they kind of like do more of what they thought was good in the first one and sometimes go overboard. But one thing you mentioned in your take was that they kind of muted some of the elements of the first Deadpool. So do you think they were good? They selected the right things and didn't mix them up or turn them up too high for the sequel? Or is this a better movie than the first one?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think I can count on my right hand how many times he looked at the camera. Like, they definitely peeled back on that, pulled back on that intentionally, and I think it works. I mean, there are times when he interacts with the, you know, he'll say, like, at one point he says, like, you know, "Go ahead, Dolly," and then a Dolly Parton song starts playing, and, like, that works. So there are times like that, but it follows naturally from the scene now instead of just doing it for the sake of doing it. And I'd have to see it again, but my initial instinct after seeing this movie was that it was better than the first. I certainly enjoyed it more than the first. So, in summary, you should see this movie if you like Ryan Reynolds, if you're sick of the way Marvel movies are, you're sick of the way Marvel comic book movies are, if you like meta-ness, if you like references, and if you like the first Deadpool. You shouldn't see this movie if you don't like over-the-top violence, you don't like absurd references, and you just don't like weirdness. If you're just going to be like, what the fuck is going on? If you're over the age of 50, don't see this movie. Unless you're like a cool grandma. If you're like a cool grandma, see this movie.
Cool grandma.
Deadpool 2, the perfect movie for cool grandmas. All right, let's talk about some movies that are coming up, shall we?
Let's do it.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
Axel is the story of an edgy teen that finds a robot dog made by... What do you call the companies that make, like, weapons? Weapons manufacturers? I don't know what to call those companies.
Defense contractors?
But see, that's what I wanted to say, but it wasn't clear they had a government contract or not. It was just they made a robot dog as a weapon for some reason.
Arms dealers?
Arms dealers? Maybe? I don't know. It was very unclear. When I was watching this trailer, I was very aware of like, what the pitch was, which is why I made the story the way it was. I described the story the way it was. You know, they were like, what if an edgy teen found a robot dog that was made as a weapon? And that was the entire pitch. And that's the entire trailer. Look, it's for me, for this trailer, I don't dislike it. I'm not like sitting here going, oh, this is terrible. It looks entertaining, but it doesn't look original. There's no reason I would want to like go to the theater and go out of my way to see this movie. If I was somewhere and people were like, yeah, we're going to watch Axel, however you say it, you want to put it on? You want to watch it with us? I'd go, yeah, sure. But I'm not going to go out of my way to see this movie. So for me, because of that, tackle. Daniel?
This, to me, was a quintessential 80s movie made in 2018. For that reason, I'm probably going to tackle it. I will say that, to me, this seems like I don't know, 11 to 14-year-old kid movie, in a certain sense. But you can even subdivide kids who'd be interested in this into, like, if you ever remember playing with action figures and, like, which action figure you dove for is the one you wanted to be. Like, I had friends who wanted, like, to be, like, wanted the Chewbacca action figures, and I always wanted, like, one of the Jedi or one of the Sith. I think this is for the Chewbacca action figure playing 9 to 14-year-olds, to be really specific about this movie.
What kind of a kid wants to be Chewbacca? Isn't that a little fucking weird?
Well, no, but have you ever met those kind of kids, though? They're into that kind of thing. It's a little more, I don't know. I'd have to think about what the dissertation would be on these kind of kids, but that's who I think of when I see this kind of movie. It's not the kind of movie for me, it's the kind of movie for them. For those reasons, it doesn't look bad, it just doesn't look interesting, which, so, tackle.
Tackle!
William. So, I'm going to tentatively hug this. I'm going to go out on a limb. Maybe I got sucked in by the 80s nostalgia. To me, it felt like Flight of the Navigator, which was one of my favorite movies when I was a little kid. It felt just like that. And I was like, hey, this could be fun. This seems like a movie I'd rent on a Friday or Saturday night, have it on the background while I'm working on something, and get a few good laughs, a few good action scenes. That being said, I don't think it's going to be an A-plus movie, but for, you know, neither was Flight of the Navigator. So... tentatively hugging it.
Hug?
You take that back about Flight of the Navigator. So I agree with you that it's, I agree with both of you that it has an 80s vibe and that it, you know, it looks like Flight of the Navigator, and other people have made that comparison as well. Here's the difference, though, and now it might be just because it's a trailer, but the reason Flight of the Navigator works is there's this whole weird relationship isolation from his family that drives the emotional and psychological story of him becoming the navigator. Whereas here, it's just like, hey, here's a teenager who drives a dirt bike, and then he finds a mechanical dog. Now, again, that could just be because it's only a trailer, but there doesn't seem to be any sort of depth to what's going on besides edgy teen finds mechanical dog, robot, AI.
Yeah, I'm definitely sympathetic with that. This could be a terrible movie, but from, like you said, from the trailer, it's not super clear, and it, you know, like I said, that's my first reaction. Watching it once, that's what I felt. I felt some of that Flight of the Navigator nostalgia, so maybe I got roped in.
The movie, at least to me, seemed sincere, which is hard to say for a lot of films.
Oh, it's
right,
so
and that's
rare
why
now.
Even though
so
I'm
rare.
Tackling it, I don't want to talk shit about it, because you know what? It's just trying to be a good, enjoyable movie, and we need more of that.
Second trailer.
Destination Wedding stars Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder as two loner guests at a wedding who happen to run into each other in the airport and then spend the entire weekend at a destination wedding together talking shit about the wedding. I think that sums it up. I think that was, again, that was the pitch, I would imagine. What if we had two wedding guests who nobody likes, but they found each other? Now, it's not, I'm not sure if this is a romantic comedy or if they're satirizing romantic comedies. It's hard to tell. What I can say, oh no, I accidentally pushed play on one of the trailers. What I can say is I liked Keanu Reeves in this trailer very, very much. I thought he was very funny. I liked the things he was saying. I loved his delivery. This is an example of when people say Keanu can't act that I would point to and be like, how can you say he can't act? He's great in this trailer. But because I think this is ultimately going to be a rom-com, I just don't have any interest in seeing this. Tackle. Daniel?
I would watch this on Netflix. Totally. To me, it seems like a John Wick gets high and goes to a wedding. so I'm hoping at some point he has like a weird drug trip where he's like gun-fooing everyone at the wedding. But other than that, I'd watch this on Netflix. I would not watch this in theaters. So I guess, what does it come down to then? Super, super light hug.
I believe we have a Netflix and hug sound effect.
Oh, well, that's what I would choose, is Netflix and hug then.
Netflix and hug.
William?
I watched the trailer. I didn't really laugh. And if this was supposed to be a rom-com, it's got to be a lot heavier on the comedy for me. I don't know. It just seemed like two really awful people being awful to each other and to the, you know, wedding party. It's just not for me. Tackle.
Interesting, because I thought she was worse than he was. I thought he was just kind of like annoyed at the whole thing, but I felt like she was kind of a loser. I don't know.
Yeah, I can see that for sure.
Third trailer.
Bohemian Rhapsody, again, here's the studio pitch, is the biopic of Queen's Freddie Mercury, starring the main actor from Mr. Robot. There's nothing else I really can say about this trailer, because there seems to be no plot in it. In the trailer, Freddie Mercury shows up. He's like, oh, now we're going to have the operatic part come in for Bohemian Rhapsody. And he does some Freddie Mercury things. And then everyone's like, oh, he's cool because he's Freddie Mercury. Like, there's like no conflict in this trailer at all. What's more interesting, and before we give our take here, is Daniel, did you see the controversy, the conflict around this trailer? That people were upset that like they didn't show him as like gay or bisexual in the trailer?
That was what they focused on in this trailer?
Yeah, people were upset about that. They called it het washing. Like heterosexual washing.
Oh my god. He's wearing straight face. That's terrible. Also, totally just... It's a teaser, first of all. I'm sure they're going to get into his sex life. Partially because it's... Anyway, it's a huge part of his being. Of course they're going to get into it. It's a 2-minute trailer. Calm yourselves.
Yeah, I think they health washed this too, right? They didn't show that he had AIDS in this trailer. How could they do that?
Right. It was a teaser of like the high moments of his life. Right. When he was at his peak, when he was his best. I just get over yourself, social justice warriors. Just take a break.
So when you say that, Daniel, when you say it's a teaser of the high moments of his life, my problem with movies like this is, why wouldn't I just watch a documentary? Like, couldn't they have just spent the money making a documentary of his life? Wouldn't that have been interesting enough because of how interesting and unique of a person he was? So for me, I would rather watch a documentary of this. I don't need this to be fictionalized. I mean, we've seen this over and over again where they're doing all these fictionalized versions of all these famous artists. And I've said again and again, I don't care. And this seems to be the extreme ones. Other ones with Mary Shelley, they've at least tried to make like, oh, she's fighting the patriarchy, blah, blah, blah. Here it's just, hey, he's a good musician. So watch this stuff about him being a good musician. Give me the music videos. Give me a documentary on Freddie Mercury. Do not give me this movie. Tackle.
Tackle.
Daniel? So what you're saying, Justin, is you want more naturalism. Just kidding.
Whoa.
Just kidding.
Shots fired.
Way to confuse the entire audience. Documentaries are not necessarily naturalistic.
Oh, that's a whole show. I'm in. Freddie Mercury's awesome. I like these kind of things because they dramatize some of the particularly interesting moments to me, and they can tell a story that way. So I'm in. This should have been, and I think was in works to be, Sacha Baron Cohen. I don't really know what happened to that, but that would have been just phenomenal casting. But as it is, the guy who plays Freddie Mercury looks fine. So I'm in. I'll watch it in theaters. Hug.
Hug.
William?
So I can't believe you buried the lead. It was Brian Fuller who brought up this controversy about the het washing. He also pointed out that the Fox description for the preview here says, and I quote, where Mercury, facing a life-threatening illness, leads the band in one of the greatest performances in the history of rock music. He also took umbrage with that by not calling it AIDS. So yeah, I think you buried the lead a little bit on that. That being said,
yeah, I'm really disappointed with Brian Fuller over this. Disappointed with Brian Fuller. And he's been retweeting some other stuff that is very social justice-y in regards to race as well. And he's never been like this. So I'm really disappointed with Brian Fuller.
Yeah. But that, all that being said, I'm into this too. I'm with you, Justin. I think I would rather see a nice documentary with the music videos or music videos of the music or more exploring like behind the scenes sort of stuff to really get into this, you know, really see how this artist was and what mattered to him. But I also agree with Daniel. I like these kinds of picks that take someone from the music industry and, you know, respecting the themes of their life, but like bringing out and telling a story. I think that's an interesting way of doing things, and I really appreciate the music. So I think it could be a good movie. So I will hug it.
Hug. Final trailer.
Black Klansman is Spike Lee's latest joint. In it, a black cop who's new to the force, and I don't know what year this is set in. I'm probably being really fucking ignorant saying that. But he infiltrates the Ku Klux Klan by calling David Duke and pretending to be a white person. He then uses Adam Driver to be the real-life version of him. So on the phone, he's the one who talks to the Klan, but in real life, they send in Adam Driver to represent his white avatar. For me, I found this movie to be very interesting. First of all, I was laughing hilariously in the beginning when he was on the phone and he was saying all the stuff about all the different races he hates and everything for two reasons. One, I'm laughing because it's just funny to hear someone say that, especially a black person doing a white voice while saying all those things. But two, it also points out what I'm always saying. He starts naming like Irish, Italians as people he hates to show that he is truly white. And it's what I'm always saying about, like, there is no white. Like, does Aryan at this point just mean German? And did the Ku Klux Klan embrace that German definition of what it means to be truly white. I mean, that's probably historical knowledge I don't have. Maybe one of you two have it. So I found that appealing. But then I also found interesting at the end was, so he's fighting the Ku Klux Klan the entire time, and he's fighting this white collectivism, which is fucked up. But then a black woman tries to get him involved with the Black Panther movement, and it seemed like the actor was trying to portray discomfort with the black collectivism as well. So I think that this movie could be not only really well made, it looks very well made, but it also looks like it could be very culturally interesting and intellectually interesting. So I'm looking forward to this one. Hug.
Hug.
Daniel?
I found myself completely blown away with how good this looks. Acting, writing, plot-wise, it looks utterly fascinating, and I totally did not expect to feel that way. One, Spike Lee doesn't typically make movies that interest me. Two, the theme seemed like it was ripe for being preachy and social justice-y, which it still could be, by the way. Totally could be, but the way this trailer is cut, I'm totally in on this movie. Hug.
Hug.
William?
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I was as skeptical as I could be about this trailer, but just looking at the trailer, and I haven't read anything else about this film, it looked interesting. It looked good. It looked like it was going to deal with a political topic, but not be preachy. We'll see about that, though. Maybe this is one of those movies where, you know, 70-80% of it is perfect, and then it, you know, turns for the worse at the end. We'll have to wait and see. But based just on the trailer, I'm giving this one a hug.
Hug.
There is, though, the conversation that has been going on within the Black American community. And we talked about this a few episodes ago with the whole Kanye thing and the whole it's important to be individualistic and saying, you know, black people don't have to be Democrats. So it's possible Spike Lee is forwarding that conversation because I can't believe that an entire group of people are going to allow themselves to be linked collectively forever. I have to think there are going to be enough independent, healthy, rational people within any community that are going to want to be seen as individuals and not just be a collective group. So I have hope that this is part of that continuing conversation, which can only be good for everyone because we're all individuals. And if we see anyone rebelling against the group identity that's been forced upon them, that can only help each of us be more strongly convicted in being an individual. I'm going to take that lack of responses. Yeah, that was really brilliant, Justin. Keep going. Keep talking about this kind of stuff. So we're going to keep talking about that stuff. We're going to introduce a new segment here. And this new segment is basically, what is it like to live on the midside? What is it like to be a midsider every day in your life? And apropos-ly, we're naming this. Is apropos-ly a word? I don't know. Dependent clauses. We're naming this segment Life on the Midside. This week in the Welcome to the Midside Facebook thread, Daniel sent in an article he wanted us to talk about. It's 8 brutal life lessons that will immediately make you more successful. And I was initially skeptical because, Daniel, how many of these fucking types of articles are there on the internet? Oh, take this advice and your life will immediately get better. Blah, 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 blah. Why did this one stand out to you in particular?
The over-under on number of articles is infinity, and I would take the over. So this one stood out to me. Well, the title was, you know, brutal life lessons, and they ended up not being that totally brutal. But essentially, a lot of the things here in this article in particular about looking inward, about making your own self-worth, your own self-esteem, worrying less about what other people think of you and what other people do. So it had a very selfish theme to a lot of these points, and so that it stood out to me in that regard. And it stood out because usually in a list of 8, you'll get 3/4 of 1 good advice. But in this, there's probably 3 to 5 that I consider to be good advice. And that is wholly unusual in these.
Right, and there were four we're going to highlight here, and the four or the three you wanted to highlight, which are really about, you know, the looking inward and the self-love and the self-respect, are determine your own self-worth, which is number four. Number six is third or thousandth. I don't even, how do you say that? Thousandth times a charm. It's really hard to say. I hope my pop protector on this mic got that. And the number seven is you need to be your own best cheerleader. And these are all what you're talking about as far as the self-love goes. And I know personally that I've had trouble and have trouble with some of these. I've had trouble over my life with number four. That's really hard to modulate, especially when you're living in a culture that preaches second-handedness, because you want to say, oh, I'm worth this. I think I'm worth this. But then you go out in the world and you get a certain response and you're like, well, maybe I'm not worth that if that's the response I'm getting. So I find that difficult. But then also number seven, I think is really hard because we're taught very basically what's one of the seven, pride is one of the seven deadly sins, right? So like,
that's right.
We're also taught humility is super important. So where's the line between being your own best cheerleader and being overly braggadocious? And then also, again, you could just be being your own best cheerleader and you're being shouted down. So these are things that are very, they seem very simple when you say them like this, but they're, it's sort of like when you read a fitness thing and they say like, do these things and you'll gain muscle mass, but it's really fucking hard to stick to the discipline and the schedule they have written out. It's sort of, to me, that's the same thing here.
Yeah, totally. So addressing the number seven, be your own best cheerleader first, and then we'll let William weigh in on this. I think the cheerleader thing is actually not a bad analogy in and of itself. No one, you know, maybe it's less masculine than it should be. But the point of it is, when do cheerleaders cheer? During game time. And that's when you need to be your best cheerleader as well, when the game is on, when you are in a situation where that is appropriate. Cheerleaders, hope to God, aren't cheering in the Starbucks line. Otherwise, they'll get horrible slurs written on their cups. But the point is, if you're sort of doing this in times when it's inappropriate, if you're doing this at, I don't know, let's call it a funeral for as an extreme example, you're not going to make friends. You're going to be less effective than you would normally be. So, but at the same time, there is no one out there walking around talking you up. There is, I mean, unless your mom is following you around to like job interviews and networking events and conferences, there is no one out there to explain how good you are at what you do, how awesome of a person you are, how great of a, you know, how moral upstanding human being you are. You have to do all that. You just have to find ways to do it in a way that's not obnoxious. But you do have to find ways to do it. You must, because no one else will. Period. That's it. It's just you. So I don't know, William, if you've experienced any of this in your life.
Yeah, I definitely resonated with a couple of these as well. I'm going to probably steal Justin's, but the time to say goodbye one was something I struggled with really early in my life. Really knowing who are the people that are contributing to my success and my happiness and who are the people that are not. And think I've got a pretty good handle on it these days, but I'm always aware that I have a bias. You know, I grew up in a really small town. You have to be friends. You have to be friendly to everyone or you're just not going to get by, you know? But you don't need that kind of investment in a much larger, you know, city, you know, like there are so many new people here that I've never met before that I can explore, you know, where we can find values together. And then also because I've moved so much in my life, you know, I have to work consciously to keep people who do contribute to my happiness in my life that are far away now. You know, I have friends, basically all over the world at this point because of my travels and everything else. So I kind of take both sides of that time to say goodbye thing as, and also the hold on to the people that you value.
Yeah, I mean, you absolutely didn't like steal mine, because for me personally, that hasn't always been as much of an issue because I'm more likely to cut out negative people very quickly because I'm a loner. I mean, I've had some issues with that in regards to like a relationship and everything, but that's a whole other story with whole other issues involved. But I just think people find it very difficult in our society because of the second-handedness, but also because of the collectivism where you always have to find the group you belong in, and that's what people privilege. And I have sympathy because I understand why that can be difficult to be like, oh, well, the most important thing is belonging to a group. And even though these are negative people, this is the group I belong to. And we see that in all our storytelling, don't we? Where there's just so many stories about a good person in a negative group, but they don't want to cut the group out when the entire story could be over in 5 minutes. It could be a short if they just cut the story out. So I think that one's really important because I don't think people hear the messaging of cut bad people out of your life. And that is acceptable because that is the consequences of their actions. And you get to decide. You get to decide what is good or bad for your life. And that if other people aren't giving that and they're bad for your life, you have every right to do that. And I don't think we hear that enough. Just like I don't think we hear what Daniel said enough. It is okay to be your own best cheerleader. It is okay to talk yourself up when it is appropriate and in ways that are savvy. When we look at a character, I say savvy like that, it makes me think of Jack Sparrow. When we see a character like that, part of the appeal is he is willing to do that at the appropriate times, and then he's willing to look like a dunce at the other times. And that's what makes him so interesting because he's so different from our society, but he has that high level of self-esteem to be able to do that. So I think what makes this article different is it says a lot of things that people don't hear. And I think they need to be heard, these things.
One of the ways that I find personally to give some really concrete advice for how to do this is to combine this sort of supreme confidence in yourself and your abilities with being the first one to speak up and say if you've made a mistake. So at work, I talk myself up frequently. Sometimes it's a little bit joking, but sometimes it's not. And I will be the first one to toot my own horn. But simultaneously, if I make a mistake or if I change my mind on something, I want to get out before anyone else can say it. I want to say, I made a mistake. This was my fault. I didn't do it right. And if you can combine those two things, I think that goes a long way.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I just finished a book, Extreme Ownership, and it's definitely something I'm trying to integrate into my personal life and into my work life as well, is really taking, being honest about when I make mistakes and then owning what I can of the mistakes of my team, not in the sense of like, it's my fault, but thinking, what are the things I can do to either prevent or correct these things that I see, right? Like me taking ownership of the things I can change. And I think it's a really healthy way to look at things is to say, hey, when I'm trying to do something, when I have this value I'm pursuing, own those things that you have control over.
Yeah. And the sort of flip side of that, William, which I think, so that part is difficult. The flip side, which I think is damn near impossible, or people just have this horrible, adverse attitude toward, is then owning your successes. We're taught that good leaders take all the blame and none of the credit. That's BS. Total BS. Good leaders take the blame they're responsible for, and maybe a little bit more if it's a team you direct, but you also take the credit for the successes you're responsible for, but maybe a tiny bit less. But it's not universally all blame, no credit. You have to take credit for the things that you do. You must take credit for the things you accomplish. No one else is going to give it to you. No one's going to walk up and hand you credit, recognition, praise, etc. You must do it for yourself.
It's two sides of the same coin, and it's a coin of materialism. What I mean by that is, sometimes it can be hard to own up to your mistakes because it can feel like your mistakes define you. It's not like, oh, I'm a good person, I just happen to make a mistake. It's, oh, I made a mistake, therefore I'm a bad person. And it's the same thing with owning your successes. You don't want to own your successes and be like, oh, I had this success, therefore I'm a good person. No, you're a good person, therefore you were able to achieve success in this instance. And in both of them, I think people are hesitant because it feels like when you're saying that you made a mistake or you achieved this success, you're saying this is who I am rather than this is what I did, because they're not seeing a separation between who they are as a person abstractly and what they did concretely.
And there's a good objectivist lesson in there, which is you are your actions, but they're not you in your entirety. Like, and what I mean by that is a mistake at work does not mean you are universally a bad person, or a success at work does not mean you are a universally good person. Your actions are who you are, but they're not who you are in your entirety as a human being.
Right, I would be looking at it materialistically. And I think that's the whole point of all of these, isn't it? Is this is, unlike most pieces of advice, it's looking at different segments of your life and saying this isn't who you are entirely. It's just saying these are different ways in which you can do things to improve yourself in these different areas of your life. Am I reading the article wrong, or would you say that's a fair interpretation of it?
I think that's fair, and you have to watch out for any element of secondhandedness in this advice, and especially, you know, to point out one that's bad in this article, they have a there's no such thing as perfect. You have to sort of jump through a few hoops to get at what they're talking about there, so that's, you know, one to avoid. But overall, I think your assessment is correct.
All right, do we have any final thoughts on this? Any personal stories, anything like that?
I think I gave mine already.
The last thing I'll say is on the success thing, you know, the third or thousandth time. I can't say it either. Third or thousandth. Holy crap. Okay, that one. One of the things that I did in my early 20s that changed my life, and I may have talked about this on the podcast before, I don't remember, is the 30-day rejection challenge. The idea was for 30 days, you needed to be rejected at least once every day. And sometimes, you know, success is the third or thousandth time, and sometimes it's the first time, but you were afraid to ask. And so that month, I made more money, went on more dates, had more success with financial things like costs of various items or whatever than at any time in my life, and it's because I asked. And it's actually, people want to generally help you. People are generally very benevolent toward you. And it's just, we stop ourselves so many times because we don't want to ask. Just ask. But then the opposite that you learn, which is more to the point of number six, is being rejected is metaphysically a zero, essentially. It's a nothing. It doesn't hurt you. It doesn't help you, but it doesn't hurt you. It's a nothing. And when you do it every day, you realize that all of the pain of rejection is basically a self-imposed pain. And then if you keep asking and keep doing, eventually you'll get what you want as long as you put genuine effort into it.
Yeah, I really like that.
All right,
that
I think that's a great way to sum it up. And if you have any topics you want to see us talk about in this segment in Life on the Midside, send the articles this way, send the topics this way. If you have any questions, maybe you want help with something, you want some advice, send that our way and we'll talk about it and we'll give our thoughts on it. All right, gentlemen, what did we learn this trip? Daniel?
I learned that beaner is still a racial slur. It takes me back to my childhood days. Couldn't
nostalgia
believe that was still
for
going
the
around,
win.
Especially in La Canada, California.
William?
Well, I learned that my single days will soon be over because Justin's girlfriend has gay friends. Can't wait
it's
to
Southern
meet
them. California, everyone has gay friends.
That's funny. Justin's girlfriend's dating service.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Justin, what did you learn this week?
I learned that thousandth is really, 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 really hard to say.
Especially when you pair it with other T-word, third and thousandth time.
That's
an impossible sentence.
Yeah, where's that tongue twister, Shelley, selling seashells by the seashore?
Why don't you send us your favorite tongue twisters at The Midside on all the social medias, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Vero. And I'm sure there are some others that I don't know about that Justin is is on. But it's at the Midside. You can tell us your favorite parts of the show, your least favorite parts of the show. You can let us know what you thought of the new segment and what you thought of the trailers, Trailer Takedown. You can also go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to all the previous episodes of this show going way back. While you're there, click over on themidside.com/store and grab a t-shirt. Show your Midside pride. How have I never said those two words together before? It sounded horrible in my mouth. I'll never do it again. And, yeah, do that while you're there. You got the classic logo shirt. You got the Hail Snydra shirt. You got the False Dichotomy Bro shirt. All the shirts over at themidside.com/store. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us. Libertarians out there, what? And then when you're at iTunes or Google Play, you can leave us a 5-star review. Those help us move up the search rankings, taking out our arch nemesis, Welcome to Night Vale. You can also choose to subscribe there and get the show delivered immediately to the listening device of your choice when it's published on Midside Monday. And then, of course, we would be remiss if we didn't mention patreon.com/themidside. Patreon's a platform for content creators where we can get a little help financially from you, the listeners. You choose to give us a couple bucks every month, every time we produce a piece of content. So it's not just a thing we're just deducting and you're not listening. We're not a gym membership. You don't need to write us a letter to cancel. All you need to do is sign up, and every time we produce actual content, that's when we would deduct the money. You get something, we get something. It helps us keep the lights on. Justin, I know that we just released a Patreon-exclusive piece of content. What was that?
We just released the first episode we ever recorded on Patreon. Nobody had to pay for it, so patrons, you were not charged for it, but you are the only people you can hear it by being Patreon supporters, by being patrons.
Holy cow. And by the way, I'm not a Patreon supporter, so I can't hear it because Justin's a tyrant. So that's awesome / frightening / hilarious. I'm not sure what the hell is contained in that episode. I know that if users go back to previous shows, they will recognize or realize that I am shockingly more vulgar than I am now. So sorry about that if it offends your delicate sensibilities. Also, I don't care. But you can be a Patreon subscriber. You can get things like that or exclusive reviews of films and TV shows.
And I'm coming sure we up, we have the review of
that one movie. Solo.
We're going to do the Solo review exclusively to Patreon.
Solo.
Absolutely. That's going to be great. So check out Patreon for that. If you can't afford, give us money. That's fine. We get it. Economy. Even though millennials will be making a boatload of money, we understand money can be tight. The thing you can do that will cost you...
Your starting salaries are all up this year. That means you should be giving more to us.
Clearly. Post hoc ergo propter hoc. But if you can't afford it,
cock,
that's fine. Tell a friend. It costs you virtually nothing except that friend after they hear the show. No, just kidding. Typically, if you're telling a friend, they're into the same kind of stuff. You're into people who hear about the show tend to love the show. You take that up with your girlfriend. Okay. So tell your friends, let's grow the Midside. And we're approaching halfway through 2018. I want to grow this show so that by the end of 2018, Justin will actually give me some Patreon money. That's really, really what I want to do. So we love our listeners, and you telling people makes our day. We see it all the time in comments and Facebook messages and whatever. So thanks for that. And until next time, yeah.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Emblesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.